Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, May 6, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Melody, happy hump day.
I'm going to say that to you first next week and take it. Well, maybe not next week, because now you know.
Yeah.
And try to catch you a little off guard there, see if I can't.
That'll be fun. Had you said it first, and I would have said, and happy Nurses Week to you, too.
Okay.
Today is the first day of Happy National Nurses Week.
Okay. We have to have a special day for everything, don't we?
Indeed. Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday are just not good enough anymore.
Nope, it isn't. We got to have something to celebrate. Anyway, we're celebrating here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading as we had a couple pullbacks in the precious metals today. And why do I say celebrate? Well, it allows you to buy at a little bit lower price. That should be for celebration. And gold today right now, off the low, $1,690. $1,690 down 16. Silver was down 2 cents at $1,503. Platinum was down $12 at $759. Palladium was down $11 at $1,864. The USDX today was up 0.35, 100.15. Crude oil was down 43 at 24.13. And the paper markets today, they were positive most of the day, but I see they took a reverse course to the downside on the Dow anyway. 218 points, 23,664. The NASDAQ was up 45 at 8,854. And the S&P was down 20 at 2,848. 10-year yield, 0.71%. It's kind of interesting. And Japan was down another almost 3%. Oh, were they open overnight? Because that kind of looks almost like the same numbers as yesterday. I have to check on that.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if there was any reason they were closed. But I know they weren't 20,000 yesterday, and being down another 558 points today, that would have made them over 20 yesterday. So I'm not, maybe they didn't work. Maybe their markets didn't work. Germany was down 1.15%. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs, as she does each and every Wednesday, and we do so enjoy having her here. She brings just tons of great information. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melly. Thanks for the intro. Hey, Dave.
Hi there.
Hey, I thought we'd talk about how we can learn from this pandemic, because we got more data coming in. I know we're all kind of sick of the topic. And by the way, Mother's Day's coming up, so we're going to be celebrating moms on Sunday. So,
in case we run out of time, happy Mother's Day.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it, and back at you. And we're going to be talking about these opinions from medical experts, actually, on the COVID-19 pandemic. So is this pandemic as serious as we were led to believe, or is there new data suggesting a different scenario? Well, there have been a lot of medical experts now that have been sharing their data showing the virus was not as bad as the experts predicted from their algorithm programs. So the virus is a real influenza-type pathogen, but lately it's being categorized as a severe flu, and now you may be asking, well, does that mean the strategies that the government's rolled out help to minimize, you know, the spread of the disease, changing all this data? Well, only time's going to tell on that, and when the epidemiologists get to have more time, analyze all the data, and they'll get a better picture of that next year. So, but some experts are saying now the numbers are so low, the strategies really didn't make a difference, and I don't want to hear that, do you? I mean, we went through all that for what, right?
Yeah, but we won't know until next year, though, right?
Well, that's what the official experts will come out, but some of them are now speaking up, and we're going to be talking about this epidemiologist from Sweden in just a minute. He's sought after. He's so special in what he does. But right now I want to talk about these two California doctors, the Cali docs. Their physicians, Dr. Dan Erickson and Dr. Artin Mashi. Anyway, they operate this urgent care facility, and they recently came under fire because they had helped their community, and then they had a community press conference in which they said they felt that based on their own research and testing data in their community and in speaking with other physicians and hospital doctors, they said the COVID-19 is not as prevalent in numbers as being reported. So these two guys, they actually invested in testing kits and offered free testing to their community, and they had thousands of people come to get tested, and a lot of employers sent their employees there to get tested. And so this is how they accumulated this data. So they said the patients that they were treating for flu symptoms, he said it wasn't severe, and many were tested and were not positive for the virus. And then the ones that they tested that were positive for the virus, if they did have symptoms, they were not severe at all. So then they check with hospital physicians in their California community, and they were getting, and we mentioned this the other week, they had received letters from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services directing them to log deaths as COVID-19 when it would not be the cause of death, which is very unethical and made a lot of these doctors uncomfortable. And why would they request such a thing? Well, all thing that you can think of is that it would make your numbers on the pandemic seem higher than what is in reality. So any pandemic can be used kind of as a control mechanism to try to change society. It's sort of like a social conditioning issue. And we're just wondering now, is that what we just lived through? So Dr. Erickson stated, after speaking with hospital staff physicians, the consensus is the very low on the virus cases. Actually, he says the hospitals didn't have the overrun of sick patients they were expecting, and they were actually laying off hospital staff. And Dr. Erickson points out that the hospitals would have to cut staff because they weren't being allowed to do procedures, surgery, and other treatments, so they lay off. And that's what happens to the hospitals. And he says what happens is it puts the hospitals in a vulnerable position if there were a real need for a mass hospitalization, which is a good point. So let's get to this Sweden dude. This is an epidemiologist. There was an interview with him that I watched the interview with the UK BBC. Sweden epidemiologist Dr. Johan Geizik. He's very revealing in what he says. He is an infectious disease specialist, and although he's retired, he is sought after by health agencies and heads of countries for his opinion on diseases. So according to Dr. Geizik, here there is really no data, he says, that shelter in place and social distancing works to deter the spread of disease. However, he said hand washing, on the other hand, has been proven to be effective. And Dr. Geizik thinks that as we move forward with, you know, future pandemics, if they happen, he says instead of shutdowns, we should really take better care of our elderly and use evidence-based hand washing. I don't know if you've heard the Swedes. They didn't do the lockdown, shutdown stuff we did here in America. They did minimize group gatherings to 50 people. They did a little bit of social distancing, but they didn't shut down, restaurants and salons and gyms and stuff. They didn't take livelihoods away from anybody. And their numbers are just as good or better than what's in the United States. So Dr. Geizik is also confirming that the numbers really don't support this massive pandemic as being reported, and it falls into the category of around 0.1%, suggesting a severe influenza infection for some people, he says. Not everybody gets infected, and I'm going to explain what he means in a minute. So when he was asked if he thought is there going to be a second wave, he said, well, there could be, but pathogens evolve. And by the time a vaccine is developed by the end of the year, and if it's tested and it's available, he says it's not going to work. That's a shocker, isn't it? He says the pathogen will have evolved. And he says, and especially in a democracy, he doesn't see people lining up for a new vaccine like that. He said he also
they
stated...
They do every year.
Well, they do. He also said that we can't compare what happened in China to other countries because the dynamics were different there. he said, and I mentioned that a few weeks back. I said, you know, the Chinese people, their environment is different. They're heavily influenced by, we all are, we're heavily influenced by our environment. But over there, they have heavy pollution and poor air quality, which affects their health. They also have crowded cities and living conditions, and they also live under a tyranny, so which affects your immune system and your mood and depression and stuff. So the people over there have a different dynamic that they live under. Now, what Dr. Geizik said, he said, millions of people have already had this virus strain and were not ill from it. That's what he says. The strain exploits a small minority in the populace. A small minority. Wow. Right? Small. Right. Yeah. All right, people. Well, and I've mentioned, based on what they're collecting with the younger folks being hit hard, they're low in zinc, they have high blood pressure, and they're on a prescription drug that drains their body of zinc. And that's why they add zinc sulfate to the hydroxychloroquine, because the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health in 2010 established that zinc kills the COVID-19 virus. It prevents it from having a protein available for it to dock to your cell and invade your cell to replicate in. So if you have adequate zinc, this virus is not a problem. And that's what Dr. Geizik is seeing. All right, so also there's some damage from the shutdown that Dr. Erickson said, aside from the economic damage and the shelter in place and social distancing, all these measures, he says there is other damage or fallout from this. He says there's mental health issues from being isolated. He says the digestive flora decreases when we're treated like that and when we're confined. And the immune system gets lowered and increases our risk of infections. I totally agree with what he says. Also, Dr. Geizik had a question, will there be an antibody test? He said more tests are being developed, and one is the antibody test for people with immunity to infectious diseases like COVID. And he thinks it is not if but when a test will be available and implemented across the globe as an anti-pandemic measure. He did not have any constructive answers for people who may be carriers and then would test positive under an antibody test and how that would affect their lives. Just don't know what the politicians will do and what laws will come about. He also felt that a lockdown measure adopted by some countries, he said, was very draconian, which, you know, is interesting to describe it that way, but that's what he said. Another eye-opener is in this exercise of COVID-19, people are noticing things. It has revealed, you know, a lot about their politicians and how they behave. Also, they notice that pandemics can become political. They've noticed that health experts and their algorithms can get the predictions very wrong. They've noticed that severe influenza can be negatively leveraged to change the landscape, even of the entire world. And also, fear is being used to control and restrict the masses. So in a blink of an eye, financial markets were changed, consumer panic set in here in America, and some livelihoods were completely destroyed by this. Think about it. Unexpected. I know of a few people that lost everything. Do you know of anybody?
I know some. Well, again, I think the page hasn't been turned yet to see where we actually see the full numbers of the impact of the economy, but I certainly know a lot of folks who have, in fact, I just got off the phone with someone. He had to cut his staff in half. Mm-hmm. He's only working 2 days a week. And he doesn't believe that he will be coming back as strong as he once did, as he once was prior to this. So absolutely, of course, it has hurt many, many businesses.
Could you go 8 weeks without any cash flow? I don't think anybody can, really. A lot of these businesses, have really slim margins, especially restaurants. It's hard area. But if we're looking forward, a lot of people have questions. It's normal to have a little bit of apprehension of what would happen next, especially with the fall flu season. You know, people are wondering if social distancing will become part of our society's way of dealing with flus, avoiding the flu even. Will schools take a huge winter break next year? you know, this fall. Will a minority of the people work from home? Or will a majority of them work from home? And will we ever really be the same from this? Well, I think it's really going to depend on how smart we are moving forward in determining how real situations are, how necessary it is to maybe do pushback if we want to, you know, if we think it's wrong. So, you know, freedom's important. And I feel sorry for the folks out there that have really been, I feel sorry for the families that have lost people from this virus, because it is a real virus. And I've also feel for the people that have lost, you know, their homes, their businesses, their livelihoods, everything from this shutdown. So, but you know what? We do have options, and we have options in how we protect ourselves from viruses, bacterial strains, all these pathogens, because we're not limited to just antibiotics and vaccines. And here's an example. Thyme herb, T-H-Y-M-E, which you usually put in your spaghetti sauce or something. This herb has a natural germicide in it. It kills infections like tuberculosis and whooping cough. You know? That's scientifically proven. Also, astragalus root. We know it has high amounts of zinc, which is scientifically proven now necessary to run the immune system and protect you from the COVID-19 virus, because science said so. And herbs with plant-based calcium, which will also have your boron and magnesium, that's also important for your immune system to work properly so you don't have an autoimmune issue come up. It has that flow switch going on to help power up your immune system and power it down when the infection's gone. So calcium is huge. And you know, you want to keep in mind also your prescription meds. You want to look at them carefully, because a lot of them will void out your minerals that are necessary for a healthy immune system to operate. It'll void it out through the urine. So you want to also do your research on any prescriptions that are recommended to you. And these minerals have to be reestablished in the body. So, and a lot of our produce, for instance, where we would get a lot of our rich minerals, is 50% devoid of them now because of how agriculture operates. So we got to just be smarter out there, Melanie, on how we, you know, approach our health issues. And by the way, the folks at Apothecary Herbs, we have our Mother's Day sale going on, and we do have immune system support herbs. Also, we have that gentian root, another herb that has built into it an inhibitor for hemorrhagic fever diseases like Ebola and Gende fever. So you've got tools. Just now's the time to learn how to use them. You know that saying, don't learn to use the gun in the middle of the war, learn to use it before the war. So this is the time. This is time to educate yourself.
This is your weapon. This is your weapon.
This is it. Well, know what you're doing. And there's pandemic kits at the Apothecary Herbs. They have tools to reverse vaccines if you want to do that. They have lots of things. So you can get your pandemic herbs, if you will, and stock up for the next, you know, if there is another, you know, another wave, if you will. Thepowerherbs.com, toll-free number is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Always great.
Thank you, Wendy. Great information.
Bye-bye.
Happy Mother's Day. Alrighty, we'll be right back, folks. Please stay tuned.
Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Yes, like, how did they know it would be needed?
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. What a day it's been. It's just been one of those days. I think it's been one of those weeks. It's one of those you kind of have to get a zen moment and breathe in, breathe out, and make sure you have your mask on. No, I'm just kidding. But so, yeah, one of the big news stories today, you wouldn't know it. I mean, with the Dow only down a couple hundred points, but the payroll report, private payrolls. Now, we all know that these numbers are going to be huge, and we all know, or we think, that a lot of these numbers are temporary. So, private payrolls, but I don't think they're going to come back as strong as what everybody thinks they are, and I'll share my reason why. Private payrolls hemorrhaged more than 20 million jobs in April. We've talked about layoffs amid this massive shutdown. This report was released today by ADP. The decline totaled 20.236 million, easily the worst loss in the survey's history going back to 2002. The previous record was 834,000 in February 2009 amid the financial crisis accompanying the Great Recession. The co-head of ADP's Research Institute, which compiles this report in conjunction with Moody's Analytics, said job losses of this scale are unprecedented. Well, what kind of college education did you get for that to come out and tell us that this is unprecedented? Sometimes I just wonder, Dave. The total number of job losses for the month of April alone was more than double the total jobs lost during the recession, the Great Recession. Let that one sink in. Now, that's a decent statement. The total number of job losses just for the month of April alone was more than double the total jobs that was lost during the Great Recession. And it still understates the actual damage done. ADP used the week of April 12th as its sample period, similar to the method that the Labor Department uses, and that'll be out Friday. The subsequent weeks in the month saw some 8.3 million more Americans file for unemployment benefits. That's almost like double from what was happening, Dave. Because it was the big week, and then they kind of settled down to, or the first two big weeks, then it was 3 million here, 3 million there. And now it popped to 8 million. Economists are expecting another 3 million when last. Oh, okay, here you go. Did I misunderstand that, Dave?
No, okay. This is another 3 million.
And again, we know that there's 30 million have filed claims over the past 6 weeks, Dave.
Yeah, and what's amazing, the April total comes after a drop of 149,000 in March. And as we suspected, that was revised significantly upward from the initially reported roughly 26,600. what's that, 25, that's, geez, 4-6 times, yeah. That's a big change. The only bright spot from today's report may be a signal that is being interpreted by some that the worst is behind us as more states curb or end restrictions that have been put in place from the containment efforts. Mark Zandi, who's chief economist at Moody Analytics, says the worst of it is at hand. We should see a turn here relatively soon in the job statistics. And he added, at least for the next few months, I would anticipate some big positive numbers. Real surprise coming from Zandi, who maybe will be surprised as well, but don't see how that's going to happen anytime soon. Now, as expected, job losses were largest in the services and hospitality sector. The bars and restaurants had to be closed, with virtually no eat-in dining allowed anywhere in the country. Trade, transportation, and utilities was next hardest hit, losing $3.5 million, while construction dropped $2.5 million. Other big losses came in manufacturing at 1.7. The other services category, 1.3, and professional and business services, 1.2. Pretty impressive as far as numbers go, Melody. I think there is still more bad news to come in the next few weeks.
You know, and I think so too. And I just, I can't tell you, I got goosebumps thinking about people who, I mean, you know, your hairdressers, your small mom and pop shops who have mortgages, and you know, we've seen the numbers rise on the forbearance accounts, and you know, at least they're getting mortgages to, mortgage companies are at least trying to help. Is it going to be enough? I don't know, to keep these folks from losing their homes, unless you know, something has passed that, you know, banks just can't foreclose. But I don't know how that helps the banks. I just can't imagine being in that position, Dave, where you just...
States and particularly states and the Congress are really going to have to step in to protect property owners all across the board. I mean, it almost seems as though there's got to be like a snapshot in time that sort of just freezes the economy in place. Otherwise, we'll have tens, if not hundreds of thousands, of foreclosures. That just does not feel right. Feel right at all. So let's hope that as long as, you know, this nationwide or largely nationwide stay-at-home policy is in effect, and it's affecting businesses and individuals, that there remains some protection, or hopefully policymakers get their acts together and make sure people are protected, and that everybody is, to the extent possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but there are going to be winners and losers.
There will be. Unfortunately. And I did see, I don't know if you followed that story, I did kind of, that gal, that lady, and I shouldn't call her gal, the business owner in Texas, she actually got 7 days in jail and a fine because she opened her business. I'm sorry, that is a little steep. And I mean, her concern was her mortgage. Her concern was her employees' mortgages and their livelihoods. I just Tough decisions in this crazy world today. But I guess Mnuchin didn't have any problem creating this decision or making this decision with a new 20-year bond, Dave.
Oh, my. How about it?
As promised, the Treasury Department is launching a new 20-year bond in an effort to fund a record level of borrowing the government is going to need this year, of course, to support the economy. As part of its quarterly refunding, the department said it will introduce a 20-year coupon bond later this month. An auction on May 20th will feature a sale of $20 billion worth as part of an effort to push the record-setting debt levels further out in terms of duration. Treasury's borrowing needs have increased, yes, sirree, they have, substantially as a result of the federal government's response to the shutdown. Over the next quarter, Treasury's cash balance will likely remain elevated. The announcement comes just 2 days after the Treasury said it will be doing a record $3 trillion worth of borrowing during the second quarter. So, not surprisingly, government bond yields were higher on the news, as we saw on the 10-year. However, it is in previous borrowing, the government had kept duration relatively short, but with the red ink building on a $25 trillion gross national debt, the Treasury looks to stretch the duration while long-term rates are at historic lows. And Dave, I think there was even discussions of a 50 and 100 year. So I guess they're starting us low, 20 years, and then they'll throw in the 50, and then they'll throw in the 100.
Well, therein lies some expectations that debt will never be paid back.
Yes.
Well, in addition to this May auction, the Treasury has already scheduled sales of $17 billion in each in June and July, with total sales raising an additional $54 billion for the second quarter. The move to the 20-year is part of a larger financing move on debt that matures later in May. Treasury is offering $96 billion in auctions later this month for 3- and 10-year notes, as well as a 30-year bond. Respective sales on those will be $42, $32, and $22 billion. Size of the 20-year auction may have been more than the market was expecting. One analyst, John Briggs of NatWest, said for the 20-year, the range people were expecting was $13 to $15 billion. It came in at $20 billion. Now that would be especially attractive to insurers and pension funds that need longer durations in their portfolio to sort of spread out risk. Debt service costs through the first half of 2020 through March are actually down this year because of lower interest rates. That's interest on the public debt, $269 plus billion, compared to $574.5 billion in 2019 during the same period. So, when interest rates are lower to the extent they have been, it will lower interest costs. However, they're still going to be paid for a longer period of time.
It's kind of interesting where, you know, the need to have governments buy our debt. And sometimes it makes me wonder if a lot of the rhetoric leading up to some of this from both is all kind of like some sort of a dance to make sure that our debt gets bought. I don't know. I'm sure there's got to be phone calls and promises made to do this just to buy our debt. I mean, it probably works both ways, as all countries need, you know, somebody buying their debt. I mean, yeah. I don't...
Give us another $100 billion. We'll make sure that this new class of weapons finds their way into a future appropriations package.
Mortgage application volume rose 0.1% last week compared with the previous week. You know, this tiny gain, of course, is driven entirely by buyers, and mortgage applications to purchase a home rose for the third straight week, up 7% from a week earlier, and purchase volume was still 19% lower annually. just 3 weeks ago, purchase volume was down 35% annually. So demand last week was led by strong growth in Arizona, Texas, and California. Anything else going on there? No, not really. Another sad story is, you know, we've talked about the poultries and the pig farms and the ranchers. Well, we've talked about the dairy farmers before. And actually, this year was supposed to be a better year for the dairy farmers. But now this year, it's going to, you know, maybe drive a lot of them out of business for good. Some dairy farmers hope that some government relief will keep them afloat as they continue to dump countless gallons of milk that they would have sold to restaurants, schools, but now they're shuttered. The last several weeks have proven an unexpectedly challenging time for the entire agricultural sector as the country's food service supply chain struggles to adjust to life in an unforeseen and unprecedented situation. But dairy farmers have to figure out what to do with their extremely perishable product, and about 50% of the industry's demand from restaurants, school cafeterias, and, you know, as they're still waiting for, well, we know schools aren't coming back, so they won't get any relief from the schools. Restaurants will only be coming back maybe 50% since they can only sit everybody every 6 feet. So it's not going to come back real strong probably until the fall. So there was one article, I mentioned it this morning on a program, dairy farmer in, I think it was Pennsylvania, where he just started selling his milk to the local people, and there was a whole line of people waiting to take his milk. Well, you know, the regulators will have to come in and step in instead of letting people buy milk who need it from a farmer who needs to sell it. I mean, it's just like, leave them alone. I love fresh milk, right from, I mean, it tastes like milk. It doesn't taste like the watered-down, poisonous stuff that you get in the plastic container. I love real milk. It's probably very healthy for you.
Straight from the udder.
Straight from the udder. See, we got about 15 seconds. We're going to talk about some of the states that are getting the most federal aid. Some of the smaller states are versus some of the larger ones and so forth. We can talk about that when we come back, and maybe some spending habits that are changing. Are they changing for the good, for the bad, or are they just changing? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And going into the break, we're going to talk about spending habits, how they're turning around, different things that people are doing. And I was telling Dave through the program today, I ordered a bike, okay? And it's interesting because the bike shops, bicycle shops, they don't have inventory. Because all the bikes, guess where they come from? They're not made here in the United States. And you have all of that traffic cut off from coming in. So people don't know when inventory is coming. So it's kind of interesting, even how it affects the little corner store. Now, he's deemed as essential, so they were allowed to be open for transportation. But their inventory, how it affects them. And if they can't sell bikes, they're open, but there's no inventory, so there's no money. So we forget the chain of where product comes from anymore. And do you think that these products will be made again in the United States? Of course not. It's not going to happen. Not to any meaningful way. You know, the only way it would be meaningful is if for some reason there would be complete annihilation in the abilities to transport goods from point A, China, to point B, the United States, and we'd have to make stuff here. So, you know, if you cut off that ability to transport, that might happen. Don't know. But everything that we would buy would be very expensive. Very expensive. And then we'd have to think, well, where do we get the parts to make the bike? We don't make any of that here. So you all get where I'm going with this. But, you know, you have about a third of Americans are stress spending. I don't know if that's good or bad, Dave. I mean, normally, when you have 70% of consumerism in this country, it's been said for a long time that that was all stress spending. So if it's only a third now, maybe that number is a little bit better. But anyway, it's a little tongue-in-cheek there. But a recent survey found that 35% of respondents made impulse buys to deal with stress. Among those who said they made impulse purchases, close to half, 45% said they spend money because of stress at least once a week. Another 17% make impulse buys daily. Survey also found that nearly one in five, 18% of the respondents, are actually spending more now. But they're not working. They're spending more. Then you wonder why they can't make their mortgage payments. Entertainment and alcohol make up half of all the non-essential spending. Americans are spending the most non-essential money on entertainment, 29%, alcohol, 23%. Online sales of consumer packaged goods are up 60% over the same week last year. Food is up the most, 86%, for the 1 week period ending April 25th versus the same week a year ago. Hand sanitizer, that grew more than any other item in stores. It held the third position last week, but rose as people restocked their health and safety products. Sales of the stuff have also increased a whopping 420% over a year ago, Dave.
Frozen foods are the top growing in-store purchases. It's up 47% year over year. That's followed by meat, up 41%, and dairy, up 32% as consumers continue to load up on food staples. Now, spending on transportation, not surprisingly, is way down. More than 20% of respondents who regularly rely on buses, subways, or trains said they no longer will, while another 28% said they'll likely use public transportation less often. And more than half of those who had used the ride-sharing apps, Uber and Lyft, and services, said they will stop using them completely or use them less. Just over 17% of respondents said they'll rely on their personal vehicles to get around, with about one in four saying that that will be their exclusive mode of transportation going forward. And nearly 40% of respondents said they're likely to use contactless payment options via their mobile device or credit card when shopping. That was what our newsletter article was about this week. And last, over 25% said they're now shopping more often at locally owned stores and buying more locally made, grown, or sourced products. So, you tell us, it does sound like spending habits are changing. Perhaps it's part of a new evolution, Melody, that we really won't know the long-term effects of until more of our country reopens.
Mm-hmm. I think this is an important story, and I'm glad you brought it. And it's an interesting... Tell the listeners about your topic.
Oh, levity is golden. Well, it's zoos, Melody. Zoos, Z-O-O. The Phoenix Zoo, which is struggling like others around the world during all these closures, has found an unlikely savior in a sloth. Fernando, you may be a slow mover in person, 4-year-old two-toed sloth has risen rapidly on the internet. Since Fernando joined Cameo, a video sharing platform where people pay for celebrity shoutouts, the zoo has received 150 requests for a personalized clip. His popularity let the zoo boost his fee from $25 to $50 a pop. Bert Castro, who's Phoenix Zoo's president and CEO, said, I think we've gotten more creative. Kind of thinking a little bit outside the box, we're trying things we never have before. And a lot of zoos have to. Social media is one way. Zoos worldwide are engaging with people who can no longer visit, and that's their main source of income, tickets. And they have to raise that much needed cash through other ways. Zoos and aquariums have brought adorable distractions by posing photos and videos of animals, but the closures of all the zoos means they're still in jeopardy. While a smattering of zoos from Utah to Germany have started reopening with social distancing rules, there's no telling when they'll reach their usual levels of visitors and revenue. Besides jobs, the well-being of the animals are at stake. They just can't send their employees home and turn off the lights and lock the They have to care for the animals. The association's 220 U.S. zoos, that's the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which typically host a combined 200 million people annually, are all closed. A recent survey showed more than 60% of laid off or furloughed employees. About 60% of its members have applied for payroll protection loans through the federal relief package that are intended to limit layoffs at small businesses and nonprofits, most of which zoos are. The Phoenix Zoo, a $1 million a month operation, has been losing $80,000 a day since closing its doors in mid-March. The facilities in the nation's fifth largest city, has been approved for a $2.7 million loan under the federal program and has raised hundreds of thousands online for its 3,000 animals. Now, Castro where's he from? He's from the Phoenix Zoo. That's right. He believes that these behind-the-scenes Facebook Live videos are making people feel more connected to the zoo. I can sort of vouch for that personally. A good friend of mine is a naturalist at the Hershey Park Zoo in South Central Pennsylvania, and they've been doing that now for several weeks as well. And they are entertaining, fairly brief. You only have to give up 5, 10, sometimes 15 minutes of part of your day, but it's really fascinating, some of these animals and how they're cared for. Past month, viewership has spiked 350% on Facebook Live, and the Phoenix program, their following is growing leaps and bounds. The Oakland Zoo in San Francisco recently brought back more than 200 full-time employees, at least until June, after getting loans under the federal program. The financial scramble melody is reverberating for zoos worldwide. Zoos from Mexico and Germany to Poland and the UK are also hoping to hang on until they too are able to reopen. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking for a place to donate to, consider supporting your local zoo. Maybe a good place to start. Melody, that is this week's Levity is Golden.
You know, I think that was a great story, Dave. You know, because it's just another sector that we have a tendency to forget. Of those that are hurting and the animals. And there's also been stories out there where, with everybody being confined, that they've been out puppy shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people do have to go back to work, and then what's going to happen to a lot of these animals? And I hate to say it, but probably many of them might just end up at the pound or at the Humane Society after, you know, they're back to work, reality strikes, and maybe they really weren't ready for a puppy to begin with, but it certainly has consumed their time while they're at home. So, you know, we do need to, you know, take care. You know, first we have to take care of our folks and people, and, you know, donate to your local charities, your food banks and things like that. Give what you can, and then your animals. It's a good cause. It's a good cause. Think of all the great times that you spend with your children and grandchildren, you know, going to the zoo and everything. So I remember the Phoenix Zoo. Been there. I'm sure it's a lot bigger now than what it used to be. But
That's one we haven't been to. We've been to a number across the country, but Phoenix is not one of them.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Someday.
We still got a little bit of time left. Let's look at this one. It baffles me, Dave. It baffles me. More people now trust government more than business? Really?
Well, I don't know. In a twist of fate, trust in government has now surpassed trust in business in countries around the world. It's according to a new trust barometer that comes from Edelman, the global public relations firm. Talked a little bit about their annual report last year as well. Now, that confidence has been plummeting for the past several years, but the coronavirus has changed that dynamic as people fear that businesses don't have the authority or tools needed to properly tackle the pandemic. In 12 of the markets surveyed globally, trust in government has risen in 8 of them, 8 of the countries, since this time last year. China, India, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Canada all report increases in trust.
I just find that so hard to believe. I'm sorry.
I don't mean
to interrupt. I just find that so hard to believe. But
not at all. Not at all. It says South Korea, Germany, the U.S., and the U.K., have remained neutral, but haven't fallen. And those are countries that have been severely impacted by COVID-19. Only people in France and Japan reported having less trust in their government today than they did, a year ago. In many of the countries where trust in a national government lags, like the U.S., Japan, and France, trust in local government is still strong.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what this report is a year from now.
That'll be interesting.
I bet there's going to be a lot of changes on this one, even your local governments. You know, in the U.S., the renewed trust in government overall. Now, that alone just tells you, I just can't believe this. Overall, it's mostly bipartisan, but Republicans tend to trust the national government much more heavily than Democrats. Democrats, on the other hand, report having more trust in local government institutions. I think it just depends on who's in office.
I believe you hit it right on the head.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that would be changing all the time, and what's going on at any particular time. I mean, people do switch their minds pretty quickly, but anytime you have more trust in the government, although government and business anymore is the same, Dave, they're both so corrupt.
Well, it's there's such a revolving door now between the two groups that sometimes it's hard to distinguish, you know, which sector, particularly these executives, are in.
Yeah, yeah. We got, I guess we're pretty much out of time, you know. I don't know if any other major headlines. You have Europe releasing or going soft in their lockdowns and stuff. So it was kind of an interesting day in the news, and it was great to be here this hour with you, Dave, and the listener. So please join us tomorrow. We'll be back. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.